Start us up.
Great. All right. So this is, that's not the agenda. So I'm going to look over here. Calling to order the audit committee, March 9th. We've got the committee members, Allison Harrell's here, and our treasurer, Steve Ramsey. Anybody else?
Christy Ricker is online as well.
Oh, Christy, sorry, I didn't read your name there at the bottom. Good morning.
Good morning.
Of course, you're joining us, and glad to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Don't need to introduce any other guests, and no approval by electronic means.
Correct.
Any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, I have one, and we can discuss this after item 8. And in front of you, you have a document that I'm going to propose when we get there.
Okay. All right. I don't think we need to approve a new agenda or anything like that, but just for
correct.
The record, yes. Yes. Okay. Approval of the November 15th audit committee.
There was no public comment.
I'm sorry, there is no public comment.
Yes,
yes.
Just for the record.
I mentioned that, but I don't think I mentioned that, so thank you. Yes, no public comment. The meeting minutes, gentlemen. Any comments on those or questions?
Second.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Keith. And I will third, so Peggy, it's unanimous approval. And we will jump right into the audit presentation and discussion.
And I'll share this and try to share this. Find one else. Nelson, I can step through this for you if you want to just take the lead on it.
Sure. I will go right ahead. Okay, so if we scroll to page 1, the report of independent auditors. So first off, we have given an unmodified opinion. That is the highest level of assurance that we can give on a set of audited financial statements. So a great opinion. The opinion paragraph is actually right there at the top of page 2. And then we also have a couple additional paragraphs in your audit report, this emphasis of matter because of the implementation of GASB statement number 87. We had briefly talked with this committee about the implementation last year and that it was going to have to be implemented this year. And this is regarding leases. And we'll get into more of the effects of the implementation that it had on the actual financial statements. But we state here that our opinion is not modified with respect to that matter. Then you also have a couple of additional paragraphs regarding required supplementary information. Those are required by governmental accounting standards. Those include the management's discussion and analysis, which is prepared by Ron and included in these financial statements, and then all of the additional schedules in the back regarding the pension liabilities. We also have one more paragraph here in accordance with governmental auditing standards that we consider the authority's internal control. And we go through each year and determine, or we gain an understanding of the internal control processes. And we test those processes to make sure that they are operating as intended, operating effectively and efficiently. And we found no matters to report there, but this is just stating that we do that as part of government auditing standards, since it is not a requirement of generally accepted auditing standards. So a government audit is a step above a regular financial statement audit. Then beginning on page 4 is management's discussion and analysis. Again, as I've stated, this is a required element for your financial statements that is prepared by Ron. It includes various financial statement highlights. So it gives the readers of the financial statements more of a narrative format of what occurred during the year. We do limited procedures on these on this required supplementary information. We make sure that it agrees to all of the documentation that we gain during the audit process and that all of the amounts and everything agree to the financial statements themselves. But Ron, if you have anything you want to add to the management's discussion and analysis, then since that is your document, I'll defer to you.
And I try to use this as a way to really hit the big stuff that happened through the year. Mm-hmm. It's also a great way to kind of document some of that for the future. If somebody wants to go back and go, okay, what the heck is this? You know, the footnotes cover a lot of it, but to quickly figure out what's going on, this is a good place to put that. It also has some things that otherwise won't necessarily be in the financial statements, like that $3 million loan commitment. So I thought that was a good place to at least say, hey, we're looking at that, especially with the first bullet being all about the incubator and the financial challenges with that. And then, you know, the big lease activity that's happening, which has a significant impact on us. And when you get to the part where we talk about GASB 87, the way that works, this is really important with this 15-year lease renewal with the Florida Department of Transportation, has a significant impact on the financial statements this year. And then I also like to document the FRS stuff, because it's not something that really has a cash impact on us, but and it does sort of change from what the board sees throughout the year, because it is a year-end adjustment. I want you to know this, kind of the extent of that. So everything else is just sort of analyzing, you know, the changes that happen and where the big changes are at and why, without having, you know, get into every, you know, every new lease and everything, but it's all in there, the best of my ability. So that's it.
That's great.
Good. Okay.
You will, yes. This is just the draft, so we'll get the final version. You'll sign it.
I think that summary is a really great idea, particularly the issues that may not pop up. So thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So I will move to the statements of net position. And really, you had basically two items that, you know, affected your financial statements and affected several different line items throughout the financial statements. You had the implementation of GASB statement number 87, which is for the leases. So you'll see a lease receivable in your current assets. You'll see a lease receivable in your non-current assets. You'll also see, leases and your deferred inflows of resources as well, if you scroll a little bit down on the financial state or on the statement of net position. So that obviously was a big impact. Because of the implementation of that, we also went back and restated the 2020 financial statements to include the impact there. So you'll see that you do have comparative information on that GASB statement number 87 with the lease receivables and also the deferred inflows of resources. The other big item that has obviously had a tremendous impact on the authority is the North Florida Innovation Lab and the funding received there. So you'll see an increase in your accounts receivable. That's because of the grant receivable from NFIL, I guess I'll abbreviate so that I don't have to state the name throughout my discussion here. So the NFIL accounts receivable, as well as the construction in progress you see there for $442,000. And then there's also an unearned revenue portion related to the NFIL there too. So those are the two main effects for things that you'll see throughout the statements. And really, those are the items that were affected on your statement of net position here. So you'll see your total net position increased, but remained fairly consistent, even with all of those changes, because a lot of those changes were, you know, statement of net position or the balance sheet only items. So it resulted in an asset and a liability because of the way the implementation worked for the GASB 87. So your total net position was almost $7.5 million last year, where you have almost $7.6 million this year.
And just to put that in perspective, as she was saying, you had, for GASB 87 implementation, you had, you know, the asset, you had the liability, and the net effect, I think, was like $25,000, even though we've got, you know, a couple million dollars in lease receivable the net effect is it's just a timing issue. So what GASB 87 is trying to accomplish, and I don't know if you were going to cover this later, but I think this would probably be a good time to talk about that, is GASB 87 is trying to recognize these long-term leases. So like in the case of the Florida Department of Transportation, it's a 15-year lease. In the past, you would just recognize revenue as they pay their monthly rent. Now they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you've actually got an asset here. And it's the present value of those lease payments over the entire term. And there's a lot of subtleties in how they determine some of these things, like what interest rate to use and what actually is the term when you have renewal options. And it took us a while to sort through that. Fortunately, we don't have a lot of long-term leases, but we had to understand it and work through it. We did that, and I think it worked out pretty well. But that's the whole idea. It's about timing. And it's also on the income statement side, it's to recognize an interest component that's in that lease payment. So the same, basically, it's a financing transaction. So you recognize what would be the principal portion of that financing transaction is in rent. And then there's an interest component that actually will show as an interest income item. So we have the total lease receivable, which is the present value of the future lease payments. And then we have the deferred inflows, which is everything that's not currently recognized. It's an amortized balance over the life of the term. So it's a timing issue. It's an interest component issue. Did I adequately explain that, Allison?
I think you did a great job.
Yeah, thank you.
He's keeping up the skills, you know, every year.
That was a challenge, I'm going to tell you. That was not an easy thing to figure out.
But even if we don't have a lot of long-term leases right now, figuring that out will make it easier in the future should we engage in another long-term lease, right?
Certainly.
I mean, this is the big year. Yeah.
And there's ongoing calculations to make every year. And I think the way we have it set up, it will be incredibly easy to do next year.
That's
just adding any new long-term leases that come up. So.
Long-term is defined as above 1 year.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. Mm-hmm. It is, I'm trying to remember, it's above 1 year, but I was thinking about the different interest rates and how we determine what interest rates to use. We're using a federal rate, and which rate you use depends on if it's under 3 years or 3 to 9, I think, and then over 9, something like that. So, but yes, yeah. Anything over a year. But you also have to, there's also some specific rules as to how you deal with renewal options. So in our case, most of our leases have renewal options, but they're upon mutual agreement. So they're not really a renewal option per se. It's just, we're just saying you can renew the lease, but we both have to agree you're going to renew this. Those do not count as long-term leases. But if you have where the tenant has an actual option to extend a lease where we don't have a say in it, then that extended period of time will be included in the calculation of those, the future value of the lease payments. So it's a lot of intricacies. And Christy and I worked very hard with Yardi, our accounting system, to figure out how to implement this in Yardi, because they do have a new module that they just put in to do this. Unfortunately, that was for 6 leases. That was more work than just manually calculating it. So after spending, I don't know, 40 hours with Yardi, we just pulled the plug and started and did it manually. But we may figure it out in the future if you can get it plugged into Yardi. But like I said, it's not a big lift now. We've got set up. But we will only do it at year end. We're not going to do it, just like with the pensions, we're not going to do it throughout the year on the interim statements. I don't see the value in doing that necessarily for the interim statements. Any questions on anything else you want to know about GASB 87?
I would just like to add that the authority is very fortunate to have a trained CPA in your position.
Yes, we are.
Because I don't think most would be able to figure that out. And, you know, with Christy also being a CPA, I mean, you guys have a great background to be able to figure out implementation when you do have these new accounting standards that come out and you're not overly reliant on the auditor. So tremendous help.
Yeah,
Thanks for saying that, Allison.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
I do want to appreciate you, of course, but Christy and Ron, we are lucky to have both of you, you know, trained CPAs, as you said, but setting this or figuring out the best way to do it on an annual basis so it's easier in the future, that is just really exceptional. So,
does that mean we get a discount?
I think we already have the discount.
Yeah. Look at that face. Even on Zoom, that
we didn't even laugh.
did the picture freeze or what?
All right.
Okay.
And Shante, Dr. Freddy Strauss, I see you've joined us. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
Very good. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, just kind of managing between multiple meetings here.
We understand. Well, thanks for joining
us. I'm very appreciative for the Zoom link.
Yes. Well, we're just in the middle of, yes.
I want to bring something up since she is on the meeting. I think the assumption is that Keith will have the official vote. So if
correct.
That's
Keith. Yes, Keith will be voting. I'm just actually observing.
Okay.
Then we don't need to do the other
right.
stuff.
We would okay. we would need to approve electronic voting. So, okay. Well,
no. Keith is gonna okay. vote today.
Good.
Thank
Good.
You, though.
All right.
Okay.
Allison, did you want to continue?
Yes, we'll move on to the statements of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position. So here, I mean, you do have, again, the NFIL affecting your income statement. You've got that in the grant and other income. You also have in the grant and other income, even though it's slightly buried there, about a $77,000 restitution payment from the prior fraud that happened 13 years ago. So that was great to receive that. I was very pleased when I saw that going through my review.
I was shocked.
Well, yes.
We could thank you for that one.
Yeah.
Well,
shocked,
yes,
and,
shocked and pleased. Yes.
Yeah.
And long-term kudos to Thomas Al Ferguson for catching that.
Yes.
In the first place,
yes.
Way back when. But this is the largest, restitution that we've. We have minor amounts or?
Well, directly, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an insurance recovery.
That's what it was.
In the beginning, I think it was $100,000.
Yeah.
Does that sound right, Allison?
Yeah, I want to say it was $100,000 to
$200,000. Yeah. And then
way back then.
And that came from the prior firm's insurance company.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's, we have been receiving monthly payments as well, about $200 a month.
That's what I remember, the nominal amount, but this is yeah. substantial
something.
But yeah. We thank Thomas Hal Ferguson, but the lady sitting right there is the one who started asking all the tough questions.
No thanks necessary, but I was just I thought it was very interesting to see that payment come in 13 years later.
Yeah, I didn't mean to generalize it, Allison. I thought it was you or Jeff. I couldn't remember which one. But yes, if you caught it, then personal kudos to you. Absolutely. Thank you, Dave.
Yep.
So I wanted to point that out in your grants and other income that you also, so in addition to the NFIL grant sitting there, you also have that. You'll see an increase in the leases. And I know that Ron included a lot of that in the management's discussion analysis, but the primary reason for the increase in leases is the new Career Source lease, which is also disclosed in the financial statements. On the expense side, you had some, of course, NFIL-related expenses. A lot of the NFIL is capitalized in construction in progress, but of course, there are related expenses, consulting fees, and things like that. That are captured in the other expenses, as well as you were able to hold the elevator pitch night this year. And then there were some repairs and painting that are non-capitalized expenses that are included there in that other expense line item. You had a decrease in the salaries employee benefits that was related to some vacancies throughout the year. So overall, you had a change in net position of a positive $136,000 compared to last year of a loss of $312,000. And then as Ron referred to the GASB 87 implementation, you'll see in that prior year column in the statements of revenues and expenses the $25,000. So even though the numbers are large on the statement of net position, the overall effect and prior period adjustment that had to occur for this implementation was only about $25,000. It is, you know, a lot of balance sheet or statement of net position only entries. So you'll see there the $25,000 implementation adjustment and then the net position as restated. And then everybody's favorite financial statement, the statement of cash flows. You'll see here the cash activity for the authority throughout the year. So net cash provided by operating activities of $942,000. A lot of that is related to the NFIL grant. The purchase of capital assets used in the cash used in that is $487,000, again, related to the NFIL. The investing activities, you've got $32,000 that was provided by investing activities compared to $74,000. That was just a decrease in the interest rates for the year. And so overall, your net increase in cash and cash equivalents is $487,000. Moving to the notes to the financial statements. That first page of note one is very consistent with the prior year. No updates really there. On the second page, page 12, we have a disclosure regarding GASB 87. So that whole paragraph there is regarding the statement 87 and how the implementation was performed this year and some of the summarized effects of that implementation. Other than that, note one is fairly consistent with the prior year, updated for some current amounts. So you get to page 15, where we start note two. So note two is regarding the ground lease, again, consistent with last year. And then everybody's favorite financial statement footnote, the retirement footnote. That goes on and on and on. For I'll say, Ron, you can fast forward through that. That goes on for several pages, and not you know, to diminish that note and its importance, but those are all numbers and facts and things that are given to the authority and us by the state of Florida and the FRS system. It is all actuarially calculated. And so those numbers, you know, even though they are a significant estimate for the financial statements, we don't perform a lot of the work. It is an expert, the actuary, who performs that for the state of Florida, gives the authority their percentage of the overall FRS system, which of course is a very minor percentage when you look at the complete FRS system. And so all the disclosure is provided to us by the state of Florida and their actuary.
Well, not all of it. I mean, there's a significant amount of work that goes into taking the information they give us. And we now have this system set up, kind of like with GASB 87. We have our own spreadsheets to calculate off of their numbers, our numbers, make sure that they agree with the rest of the data that we accumulate throughout the year, like how much did we actually pay FRS, what's the investment plan pieces. So there's a lot of different pieces and parts that come from other places, and we are able to aggregate that information now in a spreadsheet, so we make sure, you know, it's all right, and then we can drop it on the footnote. But it takes a few days now to put that information together, whereas it used to take us, you know, a week. Mm-hmm. 2 days or 2 weeks, something like that. So
yes, and Ron does a lot of that work, Ron and Christy. So again, this is somewhere where it really is able to come into play, having trained CPAs that are able to do that calculation and understand it, because it is not an easily understood concept. Then note four. So the commitments and contingencies, which are really the master plan, various leases and projects and things. But you'll see here, we do have two new paragraphs well, updated paragraphs here related to the MOU, as well as the ground lease with Danfoss and that information related to that. And I don't know, Ron, if you wanted to talk about that with the MOU.
Yeah, I think it would. This would be a good time to talk about that. We, Alice and I, finally disagree on something. It was bound to happen eventually. I respect her opinion on this, and I'm willing to defer to her opinion. But I think it's worth at least putting this out there, and that we have not recognized in the financial statements the receivable from OEV. $805,000. I had originally recorded that, and Allison disagreed, and they reversed it out. Initially, I said, okay, fine, but then the more I thought about it, the more I think this really should be receivable in the financial statements. And I'll let her explain her rationale for this, but the way I look at it, that this is not just one transaction, it's actually two. It's not just the MOU with OEV, it's also the leases with Danfoss. And basically, for an asset to be recorded, it needs to be, I don't know if it's the right term, but probable that you'll receive this future value of the asset, or the value of the asset in the future, and that it's the value can be reasonably calculated. And in my opinion, both of those things are true, mainly because, yes, the MOU with OEV stipulates three different payments based on hitting certain milestones, things like groundbreakings, certificate of occupancy, and then 12 months after that. So we get the three different payments. The challenge is in that agreement, Danfoss is not a party to that agreement. So we're really relying on Danfoss to do what they're supposed to do. If they don't, then OEV doesn't have to pay us. Okay, but on the other hand, in the lease with Danfoss, if Danfoss does not do those things, they have to pay us $805,000. So in my mind, it is going to be collected from someone. It's just a matter of who's going to pay. And with that, Allison, do you want to give the other side of this?
It's definitely a tricky situation because while I agree that the two agreements, exist because of the other one, the actual MOU and the technical aspects there, to me, are a non-exchange transaction. And a non-exchange transaction has eligibility criteria. And you have to meet the eligibility criteria to be able to recognize anything. And the eligibility criteria for that MOU are the milestones. And the first milestone did not occur until after fiscal year end. It occurred in October with the groundbreaking. And the reason that I view this as a non-exchange transaction with the MOU is that the MOU says that the money is given to promote innovation and things like that. That is not a direct exchange. So to be an exchange transaction and to record, any type of revenue or deferred revenue or anything like that, you've got to have both parties have to receive equal benefit. And here, in my opinion, the OEV is not receiving a direct benefit. It is Danfoss that is receiving the direct benefit, which is not a party to the MOU. And then, as Ron stated with the ground lease, if for some reason they don't meet their end of the deal on the ground lease, they do have to pay the $805,000, but that's only on a contingency, which is not recognizable if you don't think it's going to be probable. So yes, we did disagree. I think at the end of the day, it doesn't affect your income statement. It was a statement of net position only entry. So we can continue the discussions there. But yes, I think Ron was right. It was bound to happen, especially with all these GASB statements coming out and all these complex transactions that you guys are entering into. But I did disagree and removed it from the balance sheet.
And as I said, I'm willing to defer to her technical expertise that I don't have, and happy to do that. But I just wanted to make it known that that situation has occurred, and that that information is not recorded in the financial statements.
Just as a little update, I had an hour and a half one-on-one sit down with Ricardo about 2 weeks ago. They initially decided to add more to their plan. When they got the numbers, they decided to back off of their plan a little bit. It's his intention to be in that building and occupied before the end of 2023.
So he told me April 2023. So
yeah, well, I expunged a little bit on my comment.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. April is what he told me too.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a nice conversation with him as well.
So
it's still moving forward.
It's just what we're all dealing with, right?
Yeah.
Well, this might be an extreme stretch, but I'm coming off of a painfully long commission meeting. I didn't say that out loud, but it is on the record, and you don't have to note that. And we got a legislative update. So the only thing that sticks out to me, I mean, good explanation. Thank you, Bo. Thank you, Ron, for, you know, helping us out, I guess, or helping me out by saying you're willing to go with what Allison shows on this, and that makes it easier for us. But when you said OEB doesn't receive direct benefit, Allison, my mind immediately goes to the preemption bill that will say any of our ordinances that have create a profit loss, if I have that right, for businesses. How we do, or you know, they can challenge that, they can stop our ordinance. How we do that calculation, what is the impact of a policy from a government body? How do you calculate that loss? It's just, to me, it's going to be wildly complicated and really challenging to do that. If we reverse that, what's the benefit of a policy? It seems like that's something really difficult to wrap our minds around. So I don't know if I just went into left field on that, but if this is just, it seems like an issue that's coming up at different times, and I don't know how we calculate that benefit or loss. Is that too left field, or is that, I don't know, I just picked up on that one phrase. It has nothing to do with the audit. I'll just say that it's a challenge we're waiting to see if we're gonna have to face next year.
It's hard to quantify something like that as a direct benefit too. I mean, when you look at the governmental accounting standards and how they define it and how they define, you know, it's hard. Like I said, while you enter into these agreements that are interrelated, but again, they stand alone, it becomes a more complicated transaction.
The other thing I will add from my discussion with Ricardo is that the informal groundbreaking they had may be the only groundbreaking they do. It may not be a formal one where the people from Denmark come over and bring their shovel and do the dirt itself, but that may have been accomplished.
Yeah, and I have been working since November to try to collect the money from the OEB, and they're dragging their feet, and I don't know why.
Interesting.
So we may have a collectability issue. I don't know. That was a joke.
That's for 22.
Yeah, exactly. We'll save that.
Okay. We can move on through the rest of the financial statements. On the next page, we do have disclosure paragraph here regarding the NFIL and everything that's involved there. And I've kind of gone over kind of where it hits your different line items on the statements of net position, as well as your statements of revenues and expenses. And then we have the operating lease note, which gives the various updates on all of the leases. You will note on page 30 that, as I stated before, that the career source was one of the major impacts for the increase in lease income. So there it is. And I did notice a typo, and these are in draft format. So I believe it's capital with an A, not an O. So we'll correct that.
Good point. I used to work for a company called Capital with an O. So if I had something to do with it.
Yeah, I was like, I believe it's capital with an A, so we'll correct that in the final version, but I just wanted to point out that typo. The next page goes on to the common area management fees, and we, of course, test that calculation as part of our audit, and then goes through and discloses the future minimum rentals to be collected under those leases. And then your capital asset activity there, fairly minimal activity with the exception of the construction in progress for the $442,000. On page 32, you did undesignate or vote to use $200,000 of your designated net position. I don't think I touched on that on your statement of net position. So you did have a decrease from $1.8 million down to $1.6 million. So that was both.
I was going to add, that's the funding of the that was contributed to the North Fork Innovation Labs. That's what the 1.8 represents, is our commitment to the North Fork Innovation Labs.
Right. So you had a use of $200,000 of that during the year. Then we disclose, various insurance that's purchased to mitigate risk. And then, of course, the related party, which is Innovation Park TLH, and the transactions between that related party. And then the last footnote here is the transition adjustments. And so how those were previously reported, how they are reported now. And we have 2 years here because basically when you have comparative statements, you have to go back to that third year, 2019, and how the effects were there. And so that's where you see the 25,000, which was your actual implementation adjustment as a prior period adjustment. And then we restated the 2020 financial statement.
Yeah, so we did the 6 leases for this year, this past year, but we also had to do all of the leases for the year before that and the year before that. So we did the 3 years calculations, which also took a lot of time to go back and look at all the leases that came and went.
And again, first year big adjustment. Sorry, Allison, first year big lift, you won't have to do that again.
Yes.
Correct. And Ron and Christy worked and set it up nicely to where it will be a much easier process going forward. Then you have your additional schedules, which are required supplementary information. These are all regarding the retirement and pension liabilities. And, I never thought we'd almost get to 10 years of presentation. We always have that it will be 10 years of presentation. So next year, we will have the 10th year of presentation in all of these schedules. So hard to believe that this statement has been out there for that long. Then the last report here, we have our report on internal control. I touched on that in the auditor's report, that this is a requirement. I'm sorry, not the last report, second to last report, but this is a requirement of government auditing standards that we report on the internal control over financial reporting and compliance. And so we noted no matters. So if there were any matters to report that we, considered to be material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, those will be present in this report, and we have none. So a good result there. And then in accordance with the rules of the Auditor General, we are required to issue a management letter. This management letter has various components of it. And it requires us to go through financial condition. It requires us to go through, if there were any prior audit findings. There are no items to report there. And then our examination report. So this is also another fun part of the state of Florida laws, is that we have to perform an examination that just states that the authority, because it is a special district, is using their funds in accordance with local government investment policies. So that's just in case the board decides to get a wild hair and invest in something like a hedge fund, we would have an issue there because of the examination that we have to require, because that is above and beyond what a normal audit scope. We, of course, make sure that the authority is in compliance with laws and regulations, but the state of Florida wanted us to go a step further and issue this examination report, and there were no issues there. So that concludes the financial statement package. I just have one more report, but I wanted to pause in case there were any questions. I know we've taken a couple of pauses and discussions during that presentation.
Anything else, John? No. We're good, Allison.
Okay. Ron, you could pull up the required communications report.
Are you talking about the report to those charged with governance?
Yes. Okay. All right. So this is our report under auditing standards. We are required to have certain communications with the audit committee. And so this discloses that we have performed our audit in accordance with government auditing standards. That was described in our engagement letter. And then we also discussed in our engagement letter and with this committee, our planning process, our independence, and certain parts of the scope and timing of audit. Then we have accounting policies and practices. And this will be the last time I mention this, but the GASB 87 implementation was obviously implemented this year. And that was the biggest effect on your financial statements as far as new accounting policies or adoption of pronouncements. Management's judgments and accounting estimates. So the one new one here, of course, is the discount rate used in the application of GASB 87. But the others are consistent with the prior year regarding the pension liabilities, useful lives to calculate depreciation of capital assets, amortization of capitalized fees. So those are estimates that are significant to the audited financial statements. We look at those estimates during our audit process, and they are accurately supported by management and the documentation that we were provided to perform the audit. Audit adjustments that were recorded are presented in Exhibit A, and we can get to that after we scroll through these communications. There were no uncorrected misstatements. We did have a departure in our standard report, which was the emphasis of matter, which is regarding the GASB 87 implementation. So I guess I lied and said I was not going to mention it again, but it clearly is a big impact on the statements. We encountered no disagreements. Of course, this was written before Ron disagreed with me yesterday, but we've come to a turning point in our disagreement. We are not aware that management had any consultations with other accountants regarding accounting or auditing matters. There were no significant issues that arose during the audit, no significant difficulties, great cooperation from Ron and Christy and her staff. So the audit process is a smooth one. And letters communicating any significant deficiencies. I touched on that report in the audit package. There were no items to report. That letter would report any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, but we also had no internal control deficiencies, which is the lowest level of deficiencies. So we had no matters to report. So a great clean report. And then once we issue all of our reports attached to this required communication report will be Exhibit B, which is the representation letter that is signed by management stating that they've given us everything that we've asked for during the audit process and making certain assumptions and assertions about certain balances in the statements. And then attached Exhibit A is the audit adjustments. And you'll see it's just the one that Ron referred to with removing that asset and liability for the MOU. So that's really a true testament to Ron and Christy having all the adjustments recorded, because as you can see that there are a lot of estimates and pension liabilities, lease liabilities, all of that. So that was all recorded, not prior to our audit, because of course the pension liabilities doesn't come in until January, but those are all proposed and recorded by Christy and Ron. So again, we're not coming in and cleaning up the financial statements, recording a lot of adjustments. So a great result here, and we appreciate all the help that Ron and Christy give us during the process.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, questions?
Great job, everybody.
Yeah. Sorry, you go ahead, Ray.
I was just gonna say, great job to all involved.
Thank you.
Yes. Christy, I don't expect you to have any comments, but I just wanted to pause here to see if you had anything you wanted to mention before we move on.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all your hard work, as always. And Allison, as always, same comment. We've said it before. Thank you very much. And this was a big lift. And I appreciate all of you, and you too, Ron.
Thank you.
So we need a motion to approve.
Or it's actually under item 8, and that's the recommendation to the board to approve.
Forgive me. I was getting back to the agenda. Okay. So that was just the presentation. So is there anything else we need to discuss for item 8, or we can move straight to the motion? Okay. So staff request recommendation to the board for approval of the draft audit financial statements for fiscal year 2020-21.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll third it. Peggy, it's unanimous. All right. One more year.
A quick question to Allison, not related to this audit, but I sit on a lot of non-income producing organizations, a lot of charitable organizations, and so on. And I remember 2 and 3 and 4 page audits. Has the whole world changed, or do we just get so much more in this one than most get?
The authority is not a simple entity. And so there are a lot of disclosures. Now, I mean, other audits, it just depends. The disclosures have gotten significantly longer, the more and more statements that are issued. Now, the other boards you may serve on are operating under FASB, I assume, which is different than GASB. So GASB requires different disclosures, but FASB, the list is growing. So I think with each statement that the FASB or GASB issues, they're, you know, trying to improve the process and put the reader on notice for certain things. So those that are dependent on the financial statements and the information available, well, they want to make sure that everything's out there. And, you know, they sometimes will have to issue standards that even though they have to be implemented for not-for-profit or governmental entities, for all of them, sometimes they're more useful to some than others. But yes, the world is getting more complicated.
Okay. As always. Well said. All right. Moving on to the additional item, Ron?
Yes.
Second Amendment?
Yes. So this was the last audit under our current contract extension. We put this out to bid in, I believe it was 2017. And you can see on page 2 there, it shows kind of the fee structure since 2012. And you can see that, you know, in 2012, it was $23,000, which is actually, that's the year I started. And then it went down from there. And then I think it topped out at $22,000 in 2015. I don't recall what some of that reduction was in 2016, but then the new deal started in 2017. After we did an RFP, it was $16,500, and you can see it increased roughly $500 a year through 2019. In 2020, we did a 2-year extension, and Thomas L. Ferguson maintained the fees at the same rate, and then increased another $500 in 2021. So I'm requesting that we do the final amendment allowed under our current agreement. It allowed for 2 2-year extensions, that we go ahead and extend that agreement for another 2 years. at the rates that you see quoted there. These are rates that Allison has proposed. The 2022 rate is $19,800. And while it's 10% more than the 2021 fee, when you look back, you kind of see, you know, they really held the line for a long time and it gave us a pretty good break there in 2017. If they had charged us an increase every year, it would have been roughly 4% a year to get to this rate, but they didn't charge us the 4% a year. So, and then a 3% increase for 2023. So I think their fees are reasonable under the circumstances. You know, I think they, even though we did a lot of the work this year for GASB 87, they still had to audit that. We had, you know, a lot more stuff going on, and we'll have a lot more stuff going on in the next couple of years with the Northport Innovation Labs project, hopefully. You know, I think it's reasonable. And then also, in terms of the effort required to go out and do an RFP for the auditors, the process is mandated in statute. We have it down. It can be done, but it would take several months to get through that process. To maybe save a few bucks. And the only other, one of the other primary issues gets back to what we talked about in the past, and at some point it may make sense to change auditors to get a different perspective. I know Allison has a view of that, and you know there are some offsets to that different perspective, but I just don't think this is the time for us to be doing that with all that we have going on. And we'll also be faced in the next, maybe not this upcoming year or this current year that we're in, but in the next year, we'll be looking at doing a single audit, which would be in addition to this on the EDA grant to make sure that we're in compliance there, because that is required as part of the EDA grant. It's actually, you know, part of code, federal code that we have to do that. But anyway, that's my recommendation, is that that the audit committee recommend to the board that they extend the contract for another 2 years at those fees that are proposed.
So I
can't vote on this, but I, as your treasurer, I concur that we retain the firm and that we extend the contract. That's just a position, although I can't vote.
Madam Chair, I just point out that I agree completely we ought to move forward. I'm just going to say, though, that the number of 20,500 in the contract is 20,400 in the spreadsheet. It's not an issue. But.
Yeah, I think it is 400, wasn't it? That was the second email last night, right, Allison? 20,400? You're muted.
You're muted. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, I believe so. It was, yeah.
I'll fix that.
Good catch.
Yes, thank you. We lost $100 on that deal.
Yeah.
No, I agree with Dave. I think we should stick with Thomas L. Ferguson. They've done a great job. We've got a lot of moving parts and more moving parts to come. So I just think it's best to go with some folks that really have an inside view of our operation and our staff and work well together. And I haven't seen any reason not to move forward.
Good point. Yeah.
And if I could add one more thing that I didn't mention before, was they were incredibly helpful with us when we got around to doing the 501c3 application.
Yeah.
We prepared it, but they reviewed it and gave some good recommendations on some changes to get it through, and we got it through on the first pass. So that was really valuable.
Great.
Very good.
So I concur with all the comments. I won't repeat them here for time's sake. But Ron, when you said the audit, that we'll need to do an audit in 24 for the EDA grants, that that could be, I mean, regardless of who we select, that will be the year we have to do the RFP.
Actually, I think it will probably be part of the 2023.
That's what I was, okay. I was and trying to do that.
That would be a separate fee for that.
Well, just change my note there. If we can capture that within this contract scope, that is really exceptional. I mean, we go back and forth on changing auditors. I mean, that more of a philosophical discussion, whether or not that's needed. That decision is going to be made much later when we get into the RFP. But if we can capture that closeout audit for the EDA, certainly with Thomas Howell, I mean, that seems like
That is a different issue. That will, so this one, we'll have to do it, was it every year you're over $750,000? Okay. Is that right, Allison?
When we hit that mark. Sorry, Allison, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's every year that you expend more than $750,000 of federal grant money. So you didn't have that this year. And I don't think it's anticipated for 22, but I think
it's going to be right. If it happens, it'll happen right at the very end. And I think because of our month delay, it's going to push it into the next fiscal year. We will certainly have it that fiscal year. And most likely it will then carry over. It will likely be the last of the expenditures will be in the following year because it's expected to be a 2-year project.
Right.
And they lag in the, they hold back on the last 10%. So it could actually span 3 years.
Okay. I've got all the confidence in the world that we'll get through it. We're, you know, y'all are doing a great job getting a handle on where we are right now, anticipating what's to come. I just wanted to ask a question about the timing. So, all right. So we've heard some good comments. Got a motion? Second?
Second.
All right. Unanimous approval. Well, we appreciate, as we've said repeatedly, all of the hard work. And Allison, we look forward to working with you for the next couple of years. Thank you very much. And then I'm glad you mentioned the 501c3 as well. There was a lot of new additions in the last couple of years. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah. All right. Gentlemen, any other questions, comments before we adjourn? All right. We are adjourned.